Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Man charged with assaulting ex-girlfriend with knife. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed a 27-year-old man assaulted his ex-girlfriend by using a knife to slice open the area between her upper lip and nose. Julian Janelle Claudillo was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. He also has a motion to revoke probation for driving while intoxicated. The incident was reported to the Odessa Police Department on November 22nd, when Juliana Martinez stated she was assaulted by Caudillo, who is now her ex-boyfriend. Martinez reportedly told police that on September 25th, while she was at home doing house chores, mopping, Caudillo came home and she could tell that he was aggravated for reasons unknown to her. Martinez stated in order to maintain the peace, she kept to herself by listening to music through her AirPods. Martinez stated at one point, Caudillo said something to her and she didn't respond to his comment, which angered him. Martinez stated Caudillo proceeded to pick up the mop bucket full of mop water and he dumped the water. Martinez reportedly told officers that she said to Caudillo that if he didn't stop mistreating her, that she would leave. Martinez stated that Caudillo asked her to repeat what she just said, and as she was repeating her statement, he grabbed a knife and swung the knife at her, slicing open the area between her upper lip and nose. Martinez stated the cut was 1.5 to 2 inches in length and deep enough that her upper teeth were visible. Treatment was rendered at Medical Center Hospital and an internal suture was applied. Caudillo was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on December 10th. He has one bond totaling $30,000 and was still in custody as of Monday afternoon. Man pleads guilty to assault, murder charges dismissed. Court records show a 32-year-old man had murder charges dismissed after he pleaded guilty to aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. David Ryan Dierick pleaded guilty to aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony, and received deferred adjudication and was placed on community supervision for 10 years. Dierick will also be required to complete 600 hours of community service. Judge James Rush of the 244th District Court presided over the dismissal, while Brian Chavez was the lead attorney. Rush accepted the guilty plea. Bobby Mims served as the lead defense attorney in the guilty plea. Dierick was charged in connection after a group of people kidnapped 26-year-old Fred Hardy McNeil and then assaulted and sexually assaulted him before burying his body in a shallow grave. Other members of the group that were charged were Wesley Dickinson, Jose Ramirez, Jennifer Rogers, Michael Silvas, Eddie Barnes, and Mike Stegall Jr. Silvas pleaded guilty to capital murder in 2019 and was sentenced to life in prison. Barnes was convicted by an Ector County jury in June of murder. He was sentenced to 35 years in prison. Stegall's capital murder charge dismissed in 2019 due to the inability to complete the scientific analysis of the evidence, court records show. Dickinson, Ramirez, and Rogers are still in custody as of Monday afternoon at the Ector County Law Enforcement Center and are being held without bond. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Tuesday. Scott Marshall Bivin, age 51, journeyed into heaven on Saturday, December 11th at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. He was born to Laura Faye Bivin and Robert Marshall Skip Bivin in Austin, Texas, on August 13, 1970. He is preceded in death by his mother, grandmother Edna Rhines, grandfather Jimmy Rhines. Those left to cherish his love and memory are his father, Scott's wife, Kimberly, daughter Ashley Bivin Gilbreth and husband Corky, son Austin Bivin, and one grandson, brother-in-law Chris Tuttle and Kimberly of Fort Smith, Arkansas, sister-in-law Kelly Carpenter and John of Smyrna, Tennessee, sister-in-law Carrie West of Artesia, New Mexico, cousins, nieces, and nephews. Visitation will be 11 to 9 p.m. Wednesday, December 15th, and 10 to 9 p.m. Thursday, December 16th. Family will be present to receive visitors from 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday evening. Funeral service will be 10 a.m. Friday, December 17th, at Acres West Funeral Chapel, with burial to follow at American Heritage Cemetery in Midland. Pastor Vonnie Taylor of Central Baptist Church will be officiating. In lieu of flowers, the family humbly suggests contributions to go towards funeral expenses. Otika Tiki Massengill Hunt, age 96, of Odessa, passed away Thursday, December 9th. Graveside services will be held for family and friends at Sunset Memorial Gardens on Wednesday, December 15th at 3 p.m. The Reverend John Wamsley will be officiating. A reception will follow at the Odessa Country Club. Tiki Hunt was born in Brownfield, Texas, on July 2, 1925. Tiki is preceded in death by her husband Glenn, her son Wes, her brother Billy Massengill, and her sister Leola Green. Tiki is survived by her children Roy Hunt, wife Susan, Mary Hunt, and Wes, Cherry McDermott, Sue Hunt, and Tommy Beth Brooks, and husband Gary. She is survived by her sister Jamie Mills and a brother James Massengill and his wife Jenny, three granddaughters and a grandson, and seven great-grandchildren, as well as numerous nephews and nieces. Memorials may be given to the Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center, 620 North Allegheny Avenue, Odessa, Texas, 79761. Jose Salgado Subia, 85, of Odessa, died Thursday, December 9th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. December 17th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Visitation will be held at Frank W. Wilson on December 16th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Rosary starts at 7 p.m. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Father Mark is officiating. Arrangements are by Frank W. Wilson Funeral Home of Odessa. Jose Salazar Acosta, 80, died Saturday, December 11th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Epigmenio Olivas Gabaldon, 80, of Odessa, died Friday, December 10th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Wednesday, December 15th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Rosehill Section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. James Wellington White, 82, of Midland, died Friday, December 10th in Midland. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. December 15th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Clydell Chapman is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, December 14th, 2021. Education section. Dual credit classes give student a head start. By Stacy Hewitt. When Pomp and Circumstance was planning for Erica Gomez's high school graduation from Lee High School, she had something else to celebrate. In addition to her high school certificate in energy technology from Midland College, Gomez was workforce ready. Energy technology gave me the essential rundown of oil field operations. My teachers at the MC Advanced Technology Center made my dual credit experience special. The professors really pushed us to be the best. They took time to go over soft skills like public speaking. It turns out that with COVID-19, those communication skills really prepared me for a year of Zoom meetings and virtual project presentations. MC teachers know what students need to be successful in the real world. Gomez is a first-generation college student. She chose to continue at MC and finish her associate degree. I do not want to go very far from home for my education. I chose to go to MC and transfer because it is very cost-effective. You also get a better teacher-to-student ratio. Both of those benefits were something I was looking for in my college experience. Research has shown several benefits of dual credit courses. Mainly, students gain first-hand experience with the rigor of college-level work while in high school, which makes for a smoother transition. Credits earned in high school transfer to Texas public colleges and universities, helping students like Gomez complete a post-secondary degree faster and cheaper. Gomez discovered an additional benefit to dual credit coursework at MC. She secured a job in her field before she even received her associate degree. She's been working as an engineering tech at Magrum Consulting since August 2020. I remember telling my professor, "Guess what? I got a job." I went through the energy technology program at MC as a high schooler, thinking I'm never going to get a great professional job in my field until I graduate with my bachelor's degree. But all that happened immediately. It's been an amazing experience. I do a lot of drafting and plan sets. Engineering is a male-dominated field, but that fact is not stopping Gomez. She's breaking through the glass ceiling. She challenges more women to study engineering. "It's a little bit intimidating," she said. "I do not let it get the best of me because I work hard and I'm good at what I do. I really enjoyed the classwork and I enjoyed the exciting work I do every day on my job. Essentially, I'm at work to get things done, so that's just what I focus on and do." Midland Fine Arts Schedule. MISD fine arts students are ready to shine this holiday season. Band, orchestra, choir, and theater students are offering public performances in December. Tuesday, Bowie Fine Arts Academy Choir Performance, grades 4 to 6, 5:30 p.m., Bowie Fine Arts Auditorium. Legacy High School Holiday Band Concert, 6 p.m., Stan Cobb Auditorium at Legacy High School. Midland High School Choir Concert, Midland High Auditorium, 6 p.m., admission free. Thursday, Bowie Fine Arts Academy presents Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, 5:30 p.m., Bowie Fine Arts Auditorium. Friday, Bowie Fine Arts Academy presents Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. The same on Saturday at 2 p.m. at the Bowie Fine Arts Auditorium. Fort Worth ISD ups scores with its biggest summer program yet. By Isaac Windes, Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Reed-Fort Worth has plans to expand its Summer Scholars Collaborative after seeing success from students in the largest program yet this past summer, according to an impact report released last month. "We hope it's bigger. We have plans to make sure that we can grow every single year," Elizabeth Brands, executive director of Reed-Fort Worth, said. "So we are actively out talking to community partners that serve kids and families in the summer to say how we can bring our toolkit of effective literacy practices to your program and make sure that we are striving every year to reach 100% of the kids in the summer who could benefit from Summer Scholars Collaborative." A top-level analysis of the program, which spanned across 17 community partners and served over 5,000 students, found that 99% of the students either maintained or improved reading scores this past summer. According to the report, 11% more students improved their reading scores than last summer's reading program, and nearly three times as many students attended. "I think in arguably one of the most needed times for kids to be enriching literacy experiences is in the summer. The Summer Scholars Collaborative Program really met those needs for kids across Fort Worth. students part targeted in some programs, like the Leveled Literacy Intervention Program, hosted by United Community Center, showed promise mid-summer, according to teachers in that program. But students came into the program at a lower level than in the past, and early assessment data from Fort Worth ISD shows that students entered the 21-22 school year at lower levels than the beginning of the prior school year. Fort Worth ISD has lagged behind Texas' other major urban districts in reading for years. In the spring of 2019, only a third of the district's third graders were able to read on grade level, according to data from the Texas Education Agency. Education researchers and leaders say lackluster third grade reading scores are a worrisome sign because students who don't read proficiently by the end of third grade will struggle academically later on. Those concerns continue to be an issue for the district, which is looking to bring up reading scores that continue to lag behind, despite major summer learning push and interventions, including a Saturday Learning Academy for struggling students. Board members asked for more concrete advancements in future updates at an October meeting and pushed administrators on plans to meet goals that the board set, which will be used to evaluate performance of Superintendent Kent Scribner. "I've been here 8.5 years, Trustee Jacinto Ramos said. "There's always a shiny plan on how we're going to get this done. I'm trying to trust you. I really am." But district administrators, armed with some of the most comprehensive data in North Texas, said that intentional intervention would push students to grow by mid-year. Chief of Schools Jerry Moore said that the last several years have been about refining and making plans, which include professional development, reading academies, and using data more effectively across all campuses to drive interventions. "You've heard us talk about our literacy plan for the last couple of years, and we've been intentional these last 2 years about creating and changing our approach to literacy. This plan is now in place, and the charge we have in front of us right now is effectively implementing the new shift in educational practice. The district is still in the early stages of rolling out the new framework, but district leaders said that last year they saw encouraging sign that the new instructional philosophy is moving students in the right direction. Based on current data, students are performing at a level similar to last year, with only 26% of third grade students projected to meet or exceed grade level in reading. We are currently on track to meet where we were last year," said Sarah Arispe at an October board meeting. "Our goal is to exceed where we were last year." Arispe said the drop in beginning of year assessments, which include measures of academic progress or MAP assessments, could be due to the earlier testing times this year, with phased in openings amid the pandemic pushing assessments back last year. "We expect that by the middle of the year, we will see some of those differences disappear and hopefully be trending more positive for all grade levels. It's about a 6-week difference in testing compared to last year. MAP assessments, which are adaptive tests meant to gauge a student's growth over time, are highly predictive of STAR scores. Only 24% of kindergarten students met or exceeded grade level expectations on the beginning of year MAP assessments, tracking phonological awareness compared to 31% in the 2021 school year. The percentage of pre-K students remained the same as last year, with 60% on track for students tested in English and with a 3% increase in students on track that tested in Spanish. Sentence reading fluency was lower for first and second graders as well, while third graders performed slightly better than last year, according to data presented at the board meeting. Brand said she is hopeful about reading outcomes moving forward, given the district's consistent approach to literacy and growing partnership with Read Fort Worth. "There's plenty of literature and research on the topic of how to make sure the kids are learning how to read, and we're working in strong partnership with our districts to put all of these strategies into practice." We're very optimistic about what we're seeing, including additional days of instructional time, including professional development for teachers in the science and reading, and including continuity of literacy curriculum across every elementary school across our district, so that if a student moves from one school to the next, they can have familiarity with the content that they're learning in their classrooms. Winter wishes bring holiday cheer to MHS. Dozens of Midland High students received a Christmas surprise Friday when the school celebrated Winter Wishes, an annual day of gift-giving. Students are given the opportunity to request any item they want for Christmas. Classmates then raise money to make those wishes come true and spend the day surprising students with their gifts. Some gifts are small, such as socks and candy. Some items are large, such as laptops. Students even request items for their family and friends. This year's Winter Wishes kicked off with a pep rally in the gym, followed by gift deliveries to classrooms. The event is made possible through the efforts of the MHS Student Council, Students in Philanthropy, and the MHS PTA. As of last week, nearly $2,000 had been raised to grant wishes.
Symptoms need not put off vaccination. To your good health for Tuesday. Dear Dr. Roach, is it safe for an unvaccinated person experiencing long-term symptoms after a COVID-19 infection to get the vaccination? Or must they wait until the typical 90-day period for symptoms to diminish or disappear? Dr. Roach writes, in general, people can expect to have symptoms of acute COVID-19 infection for up to 4 weeks after the onset of symptoms. Beyond 4 weeks, people with persistent symptoms are considered to have post-COVID conditions, also called long COVID. The most typical symptoms are fatigue, shortness of breath, and difficulty thinking, or with memory, often called brain fog. Other symptoms may include chest pain, cough, loss of taste and smell, and many more. Roughly a third of people with symptomatic COVID-19 symptoms will have persistent symptoms. I do recommend vaccination after COVID-19 infection with or without persistent symptoms. People should get vaccinated only after they have met criteria for stopping isolation. This usually means waiting until 10 days after symptom onset, after resolution of fever for at least 24 hours, and after improvement of other symptoms. People with severe disease or with an immune system condition should consult their physicians, as they may need more time. There is no rush to giving the vaccine. The risk of being infected again within 3 months of COVID-19 infection is very low. People who received monoclonal antibodies should not get vaccinated for 90 days. Vaccination has not been associated with worsening of symptoms in people with persistent COVID symptoms. There have been some cases of symptoms improving with vaccine. So for a person who is well past their acute phase, getting the vaccine is safe and may possibly help reduce long COVID symptoms, but is not urgent since immunity is reliable for at least 90 days after infection.
This is the Dear Abby column. Wife's outdoor activities exclude disabled husband. Dear Abby, my husband is in his 40s and permanently disabled from injuries received in a recent automobile accident. He is in pain, on pain medicine 24 hours a day, and basically sleeps his days away. His pain and immobility make intimacy impossible. He doesn't object when I go out with friends or participate in activities he is unable to do, like hiking, biking, or kayaking, yet I feel guilty for leaving him alone 5 days a week, and sometimes the entire weekend. His mother thinks I'm a terrible person for doing this, but I can't just sit home with him after I get home from work because he falls asleep watching TV. We both know this will be the situation for the rest of our lives. This self-care is very important to my physical and mental well-being, as the financial stress is also overwhelming. How do I continue to live an active life and still be the wife he needs? Signed, Sad Fate in Pennsylvania. Dear Sad Fate, if the situation were reversed, is this the way you would like your husband to treat you? This is an honest discussion you should be having with him. I will be frank, leaving a disabled spouse 5 days, nights, a week, or for an entire weekend on a regular basis seems excessive. You promised to love, honor, and cherish this man in sickness and in health. Would it be possible to include him on an occasional outing, if he can handle it, so he can have some fresh air and a change of scenery? If you must go out to preserve your sanity, it would be compassionate to arrange for someone to stay with him so he's not alone in case there is some kind of emergency. Dear Abby, I'm a woman of 28. I have started falling in love with a girl I met recently. We talked for a while, expressed feelings for each other, and decided to start dating. She lives in Minnesota, and I'm in Texas. She's also in college. I think she's 18 or 19. I know our age span is a little wide, but we didn't care about that. Things were going okay, but recently she's gone quiet and hasn't been talking to me as often. She said she just needs some time to herself and that she's having some second thoughts about all of this. I talked with her about it, and she told me she still loves me and wants me to come visit her, which I'm planning to do soon. It feels like she's got cold feet, and I'm not sure what to do. I love her. I want to make this work between us, but I feel unwanted and unloved. What should I do? Signed, Starting to Lose Faith. Dear Starting, what you should do is recognize that you and this young woman are in very different places in your lives. You are ready for a serious commitment to someone. She's a college student who isn't yet out of her teens. If she needs time to herself so she can figure out whether she's ready for the kind of relationship you have in mind, give it to her. Do not force it. If that means postponing your visit, so be it. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.